this afternoon, all the way to 95. Tonight, then, clear and mild, the low is 68. And Friday, sunny and hot, tomorrow's high 90. Right now, wind from the southwest at 5, humidity 93%, pretty good cloud cover, 71 degrees. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg, up next. Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Frank Falduto played an essential role in creating and developing WGTD nearly 40 years ago. He later served as station manager and one of the hosts of the morning show. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD-HD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm very excited to be meeting three members of the Kenosha Writers Guild today. And I'm excited that they can share their collective story with you today. The Kenosha Writers Guild is comprised of a varying group of amateur writers, 30-plus at the moment. And the reason for this particular conversation is because the group has published a collection that contains 27 pieces by 16 different contributors who are part of the Kenosha Writers Guild. And they have a special launch event that's going to be coming up next week on September 27th in downtown Kenosha at Kenosha Fusion from 7 to 9 p.m. And that will be an opportunity for you to meet some of the contributors to this book and find out more about the Kenosha Writers Guild and their mission and the marvelous time that they all have together writing and encouraging one another in this important pursuit. So we're going to be talking to all three of our guests today about their own love of writing, the kind of things that they've done, and what it is like to be part of this group called the Kenosha Writers Guild. We have with us Jim Payne, Darlene Coleman, and Dave Gourdeau, and we welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
Glad you can be here. It's exactly why we're here, and this excites me very, very much. I would love to hear from one of you, and maybe collectively all of you, a little bit of history about the Kenosha Writers Guild. How long has this group been around, and did anything in particular sort of serve as the catalyst for this group to be formed?
Well, I was at the very first meeting of the Guild.
This is Dave speaking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In 2009. So we've been around 8 years, and we've had quite a turnover.
Yeah, one thing that has really been consistent, I feel, has been the diversity in our group. I joined a month after Dave did. And I was impressed at the very first meeting, first time I attended. People of all ages, all kinds of different genres that they were writing. And, you know, some were beginning writers, some were seasoned writers, some had been published. But it was quite impressive. And I think, although the numbers may have changed, back in those days, we were getting maybe 20, 25 people and upwards at our meetings. And now the numbers are down somewhat from that, maybe 8 to 12 now, but the diversity has been retained.
Well, and that's a great number. I mean, you can really you can have fun with a group like that, and everybody is a very significant part of what's being shared. So that can be very exciting in its own right. I think that sounds terrific. And at what point, Jim Payne, did you join the group?
What was different for me was because the group was already formed, and I'd never written anything. What I remember very distinctly 5 years ago when I came to the first meeting is everybody was friendly to me. They greeted me. They would talk to me. It wasn't like I was just left over in a chair sitting on the side. And I not only got to hear what they knew about writing, they actually laughed and had a good time. And I got relaxed. And that meant a lot to me because I was nervous about writing. I still am.
We'll find out more about that in a second, but I love that facet of your story. So for each of you, I'm curious to know, and of course Jim has just already sort of hinted at the answer to his question, but I will start with Dave and Darlene. Have you loved to write all your lives? And if so, what kind of things have you written over the years? Dave, we start with you.
I've loved writing all my life. I think I have a knack for it. But I didn't really start seriously writing until several years ago when I was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. So I suddenly found myself up in the middle of the night. I had terrible sleep disturbances. I started writing, and I haven't stopped. So.
Wow. So in other words, you take the time in those moments when you can't sleep, which right. I suspect are quite often, and you fill those nighttime hours with writing.
Yeah, that's how I kind of started writing. And since then, I started writing a lot of memoir stuff, a lot of essays. Since then, I've started writing fiction. I've self-published one novel, and I just finished a second novel.
Wow.
So it's been great. The thing I love about the Writers Guild is that
That's okay.
We try to remain very positive and encouraging. And so people who maybe haven't written before are just starting out, they need fear being criticized.
I think just about all of us need those circles where we get encouragement and the criticism, if there is any, is gentle and constructive.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's an important gift we can give each other. How about you, Darlene?
Well, I must say I have a love-hate relationship with writing. I like having written. I don't much like the process of writing. I remember writing in high school. I remember doing some very dark, dismal poetry, really awful, awful stuff. And I started a great number of short stories that were never finished. Now I'm working on a novel, which I will finish or else. I have written a number of short stories. I write poetry from time to time. But I think for me, it's my way of coping with the world. It's how I process things. I find that I tend to write more the more miserable my life happens to be at the moment. So it's just my way of coping.
Interesting. I'm curious to understand what you were saying at the beginning where you said something to the effect that, you know, I love to write, but I hate the process. You said something kind of like that. And I'm not exactly sure I understand what you're saying there.
I like having written. So if I've written something, if I've managed to actually write something, I'm euphoric. I'm very happy that I've written it. It's a struggle for me to actually do the writing. Very much so. I'm also a visual artist, and I have to say that the process for me in art, even when I run into, you know, stumbling blocks and blank walls, I still enjoy the process. With writing, once in a while, I could say it's enjoyable if I really get into the flow of things, but getting there is not fun.
So in other words, I think what you're saying is it's hard work.
It's hard work, yes.
Okay, and so you feel like you exert a lot of sweat, and it's not always, sometimes it feels good or is pleasant to work hard on something. For you, it isn't a particularly pleasant experience, but at the end, when you have something to show for it, you're grateful
that
you did
it. That I'm happy, yes.
Interesting. Well, and I suspect that probably there are plenty of writers who experience it the same way you're describing if we don't necessarily hear that described all that often. But thank you for sharing that. Jim Payne, you are the relative newcomer to this group, the new kid on the block. So tell us about your own relationship with writing.
Well, my story is a little bit different. Darlene's was a love-hate relationship. Mine was a hate-love relationship. I started out all through grade school, through high school, through college, through graduate school. I probably flunked or had to repeat every single English class. I hated it. I didn't do good at it, and I didn't want to. I was so glad if I didn't have to write anything other than my name.
And I'm just curious, what was it about it that you hated so much?
I couldn't do it. I was write things that were stupid. I didn't know how to spell words. I didn't know how to make grammar. And when I'd look at what I wrote, I'd go, yuck. Hmm. It was bad. It really was.
Huh.
No one ever said, oh, you ought to write.
Far from it, huh?
Far from it.
So what in the world possessed you 5 years ago to seek out the Kenosha Writers Guild?
It's a purely ethical, spiritual, religious thing. I was in love with a woman, and we broke off, and I was miserable. So miserable, so depressed, so down, I had to start keeping a journal. And that's how I started. I think a number of people I've talked to, it's just a daily journal.
Wow. And how long ago was this?
5 years ago.
Oh, okay. Roughly about the same time you sought out the Kenosha Writers Guild.
Yes.
I'm intrigued that for someone who always hated to write, that such a notion would have even occurred to you. I mean, I think a lot of people in your situation would have just done the, you know, hit a pillow with a garden hose thing or go to the firing range and learn how to shoot a gun. Would have let out that tension and angst in some other way.
Well, to tell you the truth, Greg, what really actually happened is that I met a young lady who was very pretty that I liked. So I followed her to the Writers Guild.
Ah, okay.
I was hoping to get a date with her.
Oh, there you go. Well, at any rate, you found your way into this circle as someone very inexperienced. And you've already kind of intimated at the fact that it was probably a very intimidating group to step into because of your background and the fact that you hadn't thought of yourself as a writer at all.
Scary as hell.
Right. So tell us about the reception you received there.
That was what is so different. Started right out with our leader, Chris DeGuire, and he set it up so that when someone would read something that they had written, in order for them to be appreciated, we would speak in three rounds. And the first round would be just where you would point out what's working, what's good, what you like, special phrases, paragraphs, the ideas in it. And during that, what's interesting, the author couldn't talk. He had to take the notes, or she had to take the notes and take in what's being said. Couldn't start all that crosstalk.
Ah.
And that really made for a lot more good criticism and evaluation. Then in the second round, and again, the author couldn't talk, the members would comment on questions that they had or why something was done. Maybe there was thought there was a conflict in time or something, so they could offer other kinds of things. And then in the third round, the author, who's been taking notes now so that they can remember, makes comments to answer the questions that were asked and what went on in the comments. What happens is you get a lot of flow of the criticism rather than a lot of jabber-jabber back and forth.
Right. It's like the comments have a chance to really take hold and be reflected upon a little bit, as opposed to sort of an author lashing back to defend what they've done you might respond in all kinds of different ways, but sort of in the moment versus more thoughtfully and reflectively.
Oh, Greg, I think you said really good when you said take hold. Yes, you really take hold of something and you feel that you have something that's now belonging to you. When I would leave, I would feel that I went home with something that I knew how to do much better. I learned so much by the criticisms that it was really a teaching.
Right. And this is through the course of one evening. You will have these three rounds occur at every one of your meetings, then. Does that understand that correctly?
Yes.
And is every single person who comes someone with writing that is examined in this way, or is it possible for someone to come to a meeting but not have anything to share?
You know, that's really interesting because, Yes, there are people. Oh, let me put it this way. Every writer wants to read and hear people, have them hear what he's written or she's written. But not everyone, like myself, would be bold enough to read publicly what I've written, where other people are going to comment on it. And, oh, boy. And so all my, you know, flying high balloon up in the sky, I think I've done great. But, yeah. But the rest of the writers all appreciate that kind of struggle. So they are very positive about, and that's the big thing, they supported me all the way through. And support, and they teach. They would teach me how to do things so that I felt I was getting hold of something, like you said.
I suppose the difference is when it's all people who are themselves amateur writers versus if this was a group of literary critics who may or may not be writers in the same way at all and might not be nearly so sensitive in the way that they offer their comments and criticism. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and you bring up a big point, because I know there are other writers' guilds where it's really a critical kind of what's wrong, where you can show what's wrong with. Whereas in the Kenosha Writers Guild, it's support and support and support.
Mm-hmm. And no pressure, because no one is ever pressured to read something or to comment on others' work. You can sit there and look out the window. By the way, we have our meetings at Carthage College in the Straz Building in a conference room that is glassed in on three sides and overlooks Lake Michigan. So
I know
someone
the room.
Can just come in and look at the lovely view, and that's cool. That's all right.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with three representatives of the Kenosha Writers Guild, Jim Payne, Darlene Coleman, and Dave Goudot. And they are here to talk about a recent publication of the Kenosha Writers Guild, 27 pieces from 16 different contributors, collectively called Undertow. And we're talking today to let you know about a special launch party, which is going to be happening on September 27th at Kenosha Fusion in downtown Kenosha. And that'll be an opportunity to put a face with these three names and voices from today's program and to meet some of the other writers who have contributed to this thing called Undertow. I want to ask each of you a little bit about the writing that you do. Dave Goudot, you've already mentioned the fact that you are contending with Parkinson's, and one of the reasons you got into writing and more often is because of some of these sleepless nights that you experience as an unfortunate effect of Parkinson's. So when you're writing, are you writing about all kinds of other things that have nothing directly to do with your Parkinson's struggle, or do you write about the struggle, or both, or neither? I mean, what typically are you writing about?
Both. I find myself writing more fiction now than before. Longer fiction novels. When I started, I was doing strictly memoirs and also about my experiences with Parkinson's. In fact, my voice is so bad today is a direct symptom. But whatever reason I'm writing, I find it to be very exhilarating. And it's an important therapy for me.
Sure.
And writing fiction versus writing directly about the disease, writing fiction seems to be more liberating for me, because it takes me away from Parkinson's. And even though my fingers are getting clumsy and typing is more difficult, I'm still out of the Parkinson's world for a while.
And so in a sense, although I like your word liberating more than the word escape, I was going to ask you at some point if this writing in some sense is a means of escape from some of the grimmer realities of what you face.
I never really thought of it in terms of the word escape.
Right.
It might be, but it's more in terms of me being able to do what I was always able to do and not limited like I'm in so many other things. For example, I don't work anymore. I went into disability several years ago. So that chapter of my life is kind of closed. But writing has filled the empty voids.
This is something you still can do, and
right.
And not just undiminished, but probably in some ways even enhanced by some of what you've experienced, perhaps.
I think so, and I find out more about myself through the process than any other thing I do.
Right. So. I'm curious, and I hope this isn't an offensively mundane question given the weight of what we're talking about, but when you are, it sounds like you type, that's how you write. I would be curious to know if that even in and of itself is also something that is helpful or therapeutic. Maybe one way to think about it is that exercise in a sense. I mean, and just the physical act of typing in and of itself, is that helpful, or is that like another encumbrance to overcome as you're writing?
Well, it's becoming a little bit more of an encumbrance because it's getting more difficult for me to type. I spend so much time for correcting my mistakes I just made that I forget what sentence I was writing.
I think what I'm very curious about too is how different does it feel to write under those circumstances versus the way you wrote before? I mean, do you, for instance, find yourself thinking about what you're going to write in a different way, or is the process of putting your words together different now than it once was?
I think, well, first of all, my cursive handwriting's gotten illegible, so it's, so the only way I can really write is using a keyboard now. And that's even getting more difficult now because of the dexterity of my fingers and so on. But in terms of how I approach writing, it really hasn't changed. Based upon observations you make during the day and other things that inspire you, the inspiration hasn't changed. But the process of getting the inspiration onto the page, it's become a little bit more difficult, but I find that I think I'm writing better than I ever have.
Mm. Wow.
So.
I like that. I like to hear that, and I have a feeling that's exactly true. Darlene Coleman, you were saying that writing for you is a means to make sense of, and I'm not sure if you were referring to the outside world and all the crazy that we sometimes see in the news headlines, or more the circumstances of your own personal life, maybe a little bit of both, I'm not sure. But what exactly is that process, as far as you're concerned, in terms of your writing helping you process and make sense of what sometimes seems senseless?
Yes. Before I answer, I just have to say that Dave Gordeau is a brilliant writer. He writes literary fiction. His first novel, Ojibwe Valley, is available on Amazon, and it is spectacular. Mm. It is just, he's a very visual writer and honestly the best living writer I know.
Well, I look forward to seeing that.
For me, stories are always circulating in my head. I mean, every experience I have, I start automatically spinning it into a story. I could be at the grocery store and overhear some conversation or notice something, and I start spinning a story out of it. I can't seem to stop that. So, and for me, when I write fiction, or even when I write poetry, I don't know really where it comes from. I always start with an image or a word or a phrase. I don't think ahead to what the story or even my novel is going to be about. I can't seem to write that way. I just invent a character and become them for a period of time. And that's my process.
When you are writing, you already touched on the fact that it's a difficult process. What about it exactly is difficult? I mean, that the words don't come, don't want to come, or you write the words and then you don't like them and you have to start over and revise? Or, I mean, what's the heart of what makes it difficult?
I think for me, I mean, I've read a lot of how to do writing books, and most all of them advocate just get it on paper, just get a sloppy first draft
right,
done.
Right, just start writing.
But I can't seem to do that.
Ah.
So I'm very, I kind of revise as I go along, constantly in revision. So it's I'm editing as I'm writing, which may not be the best way to go about it, but it's the only way that I seem to be able to write. And I think for me, mostly it's resistance. I'm basically a lazy person, and I'm resistant to doing work. And for me, writing is, it's work, you know. And with the novel that I'm working on now, I'm doing it, I have several different characters in the novel, and I represent their points of view in the novel. And some of them aren't very nice, and I know that when I have to write those characters, it's really hard because they put me in a bad mood for periods of time. They're difficult people. And when I write characters that I'm personally more sympathetic to, the characters I like best, it's much easier, but still, I'm living in their world. I feel as if I become them when I'm writing them. Hmm. So it just takes a lot of energy.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. I never stopped to think about that, but that it makes sense that would be one emotional cost. If you're a certain kind of writer, there's probably other writers who never feel exactly that same sort of connection and with the, for instance, unpleasant characters they create. But obviously for you, there is some kind of bond that's there right from the start that you just can't break.
Yeah, I've often felt as if I'm actually channeling rather than, you know, making stuff up or imagining things and putting them on paper. I've had experiences where just words or phrases will come to me and they inspire me to write something, and I'll sit down to write, and the stuff just, sometimes it's like someone's turned on a big faucet and it's, things start flowing. The problem is that I don't know how to turn on the faucet. I could turn it off, but to get it initiated, I don't know how to do that. The only way I found so far is to just sit down and go through the motions of sitting with a piece of paper in front of me or with the keyboard and trying. And a lot of that time is spent, honestly, checking my phone, checking Facebook, staring out the window, any kind of distraction. And so it's hard for me to stay on track. But once I get there, once I'm in the flow of it, then it's beautiful.
Right. Yeah. I'm reminded of earlier in my life when for a while I was working in a church and once in a while I had to preach. And how I think there was something about the weight of responsibility of writing a sermon that a church full of people are going to hear. And so I experienced the worst writer's block of my life writing sermons. And I can remember one of the ways I would finally try to turn off all the distractions was I would be in a really dark room with just one candle and this piece of paper in front of me. And that would be a way often to just shut out the rest of the world, which otherwise would just found ways of intruding. That's way back before cell phones and the internet and all of that. I can't imagine now what shutting all that out is like. But and then once you're rolling, then you're rolling. But it's getting
right,
rolling.
Getting rolling.
Interesting.
That's the thing, yeah.
Wow. Jim Payne, you mentioned earlier that what prompted you to begin writing after a lifetime of hating it or not being able to do it was some kind of romantic disappointment or something in your life. And so you began journaling. So tell us what those first journals were like or what it felt like to pick up a pen and begin writing after all these years that you hated to write?
It's interesting to ask it that way, Greg. What did it feel like? Because it didn't feel like anything. I was just doing it like I'd go to the toilet and I have to leave myself. It was like that. And my experience is really different. Dave, who, and Darlene's are very imaginative and very, very beautiful writers. When Darlene says she gets into a character's head, that's very true. My story has got a lot to do with getting into a character's head, but in a different kind of way. My background actually is a psychotherapist.
Ah.
So I would spend the most part of the time doing something I love doing. I still do it because I love it, listening to people. I wasn't talking to them. I was listening to them because as they, in a relationship with me, were talking about what they were struggling with, they were actually changing and healing and curing themselves of what was bothering them. So I listened. What's different then is when I came 5 years ago, I found a voice. And before I was just listening. Now I could say things, write them in words. And what I write about, unlike with Darlene, who's kind of tapping into that muse and down deep and a creative story comes up, I would write about incidences with people that I knew about, particularly myself, that I was in, often with my own family. And I've got a whole treasure chest, you could say, of stories to write from. But that's what I write from, is from the reality. So I'm reality-oriented. I write about what happened. I give it some color and some feeling, but I don't make up a story. And so it isn't a struggle in the same kind of way. It's like, well, I just have to kind of remember.
Right. Well, and then find some vivid way to tell this story.
That's right, the vivid. Yeah, add some color, add some passion, add some action to it.
Well, and tell it clearly. I mean, that's one of the things I find. And I mean, I interview authors all the time. I mean, probably three a week. And one of the things that that I find once in a while when someone is a real amateur writer in the sense of having put out into the world a book that is essentially unedited. It's exactly what they wrote, all of the words as they wrote them. And without the intrusion of an editor, you know, who's taken the time to say, you know, this is a great story about your time in Vietnam or losing your child, but this is really confusing. Or you're spending all this time talking about all these things that are not the heart of the story, whatever. But when someone has written something that has none of that in it, it's a very different thing. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, even if what you're writing about is real life and real things, there are still all kinds of things that can go wrong.
Oh, Greg, you could say that again three times and not say it too often. Because when, as a writer, as a person, you have, in a sense, an experience, but you have a whole context around it of all the things you knew beforehand about that person, what you were feeling at the time, and you can't put all that into words on the paper, even if you're writing a novel. So you have to go back over it and, like you're pointing out, make it clear. There's often places where there's just no transition, it's not clear, pieces are left out, but I know them because I know the whole context. I know my name, but that doesn't tell everything. And so that's kind of like Darlene is saying, too, there's a struggle then to edit it. And you're mentioning editing several times. That is one of the best things about the Kenosha Writers Guild for me. It's like having your own editors in your own backyard. They go over the things that are not clear, what I could add to it, where, and this happens a lot, pieces, there's too much of it, cut it down. But it's like having editors who are your own friends. And it is really encouraging and supporting writing.
I want to talk about that a bit more, but let me reintroduce all of you. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with three members of the Kenosha Writers Guild. Jim Payne, who we are just hearing from, Darlene Coleman, and Dave Gourdeau. Three of the writers who are part of this group and three of the writers whose work is represented in a publication that the group has just released called Undertow. And a special launch party for this publication is going to be happening on September 27th at Kenosha Fusion in downtown Kenosha from 7 to 9 p.m. I really wanted to take a few minutes to talk about this process that occurs at your meetings where you share your own work and it is critiqued, or I mean, there is response given from your fellow members of the Kenosha Writers Guild. I'm curious, first of all, for those of you, I can well imagine what it's like to put yourself out there and subject yourself to that. I wonder what it's like to be the person giving the response when you are looking at somebody you know and like very much and care about. What is that experience like to be offering up response, sometimes critical response, to something that somebody has shared? What does that feel like, and is that ever hard?
Well, I think that's one of the most valuable things we do, critiquing other people's work. You learn as much about your own writing by looking at other people's writing. And so to me, that's extremely valuable. And the structure that Jim described earlier, the three rounds, makes it easier to critique, because as a critic, you want to focus on the work, not the person. So you try and keep it objective. And I won't say anything about Jim's, personally.
That Jim's a flake, or Jim's a creep, or whatever it might be.
You picked up on those pretty quickly.
Yeah, I didn't even have to pause to stop and think. Yeah, right. But yeah, it's so. In other words, at least in that moment, it's not about the person; it's about the work.
Exactly. So if you construct your critique in such a manner, it becomes very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I had never stopped to think, Dave, about the first thing you said, which is in the act of responding to something that somebody else has written, you learn a lot about your own writing and about the craft of writing itself.
Right. And I think by reviewing other people's work, learn to this is terrible.
It's okay.
You learn to read as a writer.
You learn to read as a writer.
Yeah.
Oh, that's well put, and very true. There's a whole different ball game. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if it was worth the time it took me to get.
That's a great insight, and it's one reason why a group like this exists, because you are reading things not just as readers but as writers. I mean, in reading in both respects. I think that's great, Darlene. What do you feel like when you are, in a sense, I was going to say in the hot seat, but I mean that in the reverse of what people might assume. I mean, you might think, as the person who just wrote this poem that you think is wonderful, but your fellow writers are going to offer their responses. I mean, the writer's in the hot seat, but I really mean you being in the hot seat as the person who's going to critique something that's been put in front of you and maybe written by somebody you know and really care about.
I think that because we have structured the critiques in such a way that our focus is on what's working in the piece, we can most always find something in any piece of writing that's working, that works well. And the other part of it is we also concentrate on questions that we may have, or if we didn't get something, or if something just isn't gelling when we're hearing this piece. We comment on that. But at no time is our focus ever on judging the work as, that's just not good writing. That's not what we're looking at, because that's not helpful, number one.
Right.
Nor is it helpful to look at something and say, well, I really like that. I really like that. Oh, I hate that. It's not helping. It's not helpful to the writer. and it's not helpful to ourselves in terms of learning to critique the work of others. So if we keep the focus on what's working, or you know what questions the piece of writing may bring to mind, I think that because of that structure, that we're very kind and very supportive.
Right. Does it ever become what we sort of think of as a book club, in which you all read the same book and then discuss it? I mean, do these sessions ever verge towards that at all, or does your focus remain on the process by which this thing has been written?
I think it's pretty much on the process, on the individual piece of writing. As I said, our group has a great deal of diversity. So we have fiction writers, we have people that write poetry, we have nonfiction, you know, and within fiction, all different genres, from literary fiction, fantasy, science fiction, romance, mystery. And sometimes I'll admit it's difficult for writers that, and as a writer, you tend to read what you do. You know, I read literary fiction and that's what I write. I'm at a slight disadvantage when I'm critiquing someone's science fiction because I don't read science fiction. I don't know the formatting or romance. You know, I don't. But still, if you're just critiquing on the basis of how the writing works, I think that, again, you're freer to say it works or it, you know, maybe needs a little something to make it work better.
Right. Jim Payne, I'm curious about you as the newest member of the Writers Guild of the three of you, and somebody with not a long history of writing. Did it feel strange for you to be the first time you raised your hand and in a sense offered response or critique to something that somebody else had written, or did that feel pretty natural?
No, it wasn't strange. It was scary as hell. It was terrifying. When I had to read the first thing I had written, because it was an assignment that we had been given just to experiment, Chris had us go out and sit in different places and write, so we couldn't be where we were all necessarily comfortable like we would usually do it. But we had to see what we had, and now I had to read it. I was terrified.
Right. How about the first time you had to talk about someone else's writing, however?
Dave really brought that up really clearly. That's when we learned. And it is when I had to work at, actually I had to make an effort to look at someone else's writing and see what I thought was working, what was exciting me, what was boring me, what was going well with it. And I really want to emphasize about the distinction that Dave and Darlene is demonstrating so clearly, the distinction between the person and their work, that we really do concentrate on their work. The thing is, as a person, our person is spilling into what we have written. So you have to be very careful, and we're very good about that, of appreciating that it is another person that's written it. So it's not the writing is no good because it's saying the person is no good. And rather, here's what works, or here's what I would have a question about. But it's focused on the work, which gives the person the encouragement. First of all, it gives them more tools to work with. They know what they can do to improve it, what to appreciate it. Plus, it becomes what they're working at rather than what they're succeeding in their life.
Right. And I think you're touching also on what can be one of the trickiest matters, which is, I think, sometimes when we write something that is deeply personal, if it springs from a very deep personal place in our lives, in our hearts, that's sometimes the work that needs, in a sense, the most outward critique, because we are so close to it that, you know, we're telling a story that we know so vividly in our own heads, but that doesn't mean you've transmitted it to others in a way that is fully clear, and sometimes that can be the trickiest thing when you're talking about something that's been written from that very personal place.
I think you're really right about that, Greg, written from the personal place, but it's also written from yourself. I mean, it's like giving birth to your baby. This is not just something that you're doing as an assignment for some course. This is coming from your guts. This is, you've carried it around, so it's personal. And I always remember Chris DeGuire, who from Columbia College, who would often come and tell us things that share with us. always cautioned us after every criticism, every evaluation, remember it's your story. And you just take the pieces you want to, and you don't have to take the others. It is your story. And that always supported me when I would worry about what was right or what was good.
Right. And if this story should be written at all, or if does this belong in the wastebasket, you're the one who decides that.
Yeah.
Right. Somebody mentioned that although this is a warm social gathering in a sense, when you meet together, you work hard, and that all of you collectively, at least to some extent, have a goal of being, in a sense, professionally published. Do I remember that correctly? And how much is that a part of all this?
I think some members have that goal and some don't. And that's fine. There are some people that write for pleasure and have decided at some point in time to share it with others, which is great. They can come, they can share their work, and maybe that's their intent. That's as far as it's going to go for them, and that's fine. Again, we have a lot of diversity in the group, and some of our writers really do want to be published, for money. Others, not so much. They just don't care. They write because they love writing, and it's nice. Our group can accommodate any and all of that.
I'm curious to know the background behind the title Undertow, which is this collection that's just been published, 27 pieces by 16 different contributors from the Kenosha Writers Guild. Who came up with the name Undertow? Who can explain that?
That'd be me. I think the thinking behind it originally was there's something going on beneath the surface of our writing. There's something that'll pull you in. So hopefully readers of the book will feel like they're being pulled into something.
Something deeper than just the surface. Exactly. Oh, that's a lovely concept, and I think that's a really apt description for what really good writing is, and I'm sure there's a lot of it. And I assume that this collection of pieces is a real mix of various genres?
It is a real mix. I mean, we've got a nonfiction writer who wrote from his experiences with ISIS at an ISIS checkpoint.
Wow.
We've got zombies on treadmills. We've got lesson in living from the dying, the impossibility of hope, unrequited lust with a mannequin, tragic accidents, heaven, hell, trading comic books, city girls out of their elements, and the magic of the wild forest, and everything in between.
Okay, if there's anything left from in between and all of that. So again, this collection is called Undertow, 27 pieces, as you just heard, of wildly varying natures and descriptions. And the launch party for this is September 27th. That's the first opportunity people have to buy this collection.
It's actually available on Amazon.com right now.
Oh.
It will be discounted at a discounted price at the launch party. And some of our writers will bring other books that they've published. Those will be for sale also. We'll have light refreshments. There will be a cash bar, and there will be cake.
All right. Well, this sounds like a great night, a great event for a great group. So again, this launch party for this publication of the Kenosha Writers Guild, Undertow, is going to happen September 27th at Kenosha Fusion from 7 to 9 p.m. I want to thank all three of you for so eloquently speaking on behalf of your group and speaking so eloquently on behalf of the craft of writing. Dave Gurdeau, Darlene Coleman, Jim Payne. I'm so happy to make the acquaintance of all three of you and so enjoyed hearing the story of the Kenosha Writers Guild. Best wishes to all of you and happy, happy writing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I hope I'm going to be able to preview for you the hilarious comedy Boing Boing, which is being performed right now at the Racine Theater Guild. It opened last weekend. On Monday, Lewis Sorley, I will rebroadcast my conversation with him about his remarkable book called A Better War, which is his very thoughtful examination of the Vietnam War, a topic, of course, on many of our minds, given the Ken Burns documentary airing right now on PBS. And next Tuesday, Barbara Bratton joins me, who is director of the Kenosha Public Library.